And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, we've been talking about politics for you and I a long time together, but I've never asked you this question, which I am now going to ask you. Why do we bother to hold elections anyway? What? Why do you think we have them, and what if we didn't have them?
Well,
I don't hear anything from you.
Yeah, why have? Well, that's the question that's being asked now by people like Peter Thiel, and those.
But he says we shouldn't have them. He's against having them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's asking the question: Why have elections?
Why have elections?
Elections are messy. Sometimes you elect people that are not good. But this was the system. I guess you go back to Winston Churchill's comment that democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others. Ours has been an evolving democracy, an evolving form about elections ever since, we started. You know, we started with only white Christian males who are property owners in most places. And by the way,
and not only property owners, but a certain type of, they had to be the dominant property owners. They had to be wealthy.
Yeah, wealthy. Well, owning property gave them wealth. And for
farmers in the countryside who didn't, their money, their property wasn't worth much. Right. They didn't get to.
Don't forget, many of those property owners considered their slaves to be property.
Slaves were the main source of property in the United States.
Yes, especially below the Mason-Dixon line, but it still was that. So, and, it took more than 47 years till people of color got the right to participate in the democracy. It took at least another 50 years after that, a little bit more than that, for women to get that right. And
black people didn't really get the right to vote effectively throughout the country before the Voting Rights Act in 1965, right?
Yeah, but I was going there, but there were all sorts of ways devised to, prevent certain people from voting. The poll tax was one. The literacy tests was another. All of that stuff fell by the wayside in the 60s, 1960s. But voting in our country is a means of power, or a means to get to power. And not everybody was happy about having people who oppose them get into power.
I think the point is that voting developed in the world as a way to avoid violence.
Well,
of course, somebody has to have the power. How do you get the power? If you don't have a system of the divine right of kings, which was what the whole point of the Enlightenment revolutions were about, to establish democracies or republics or not the divine right of kings, then the legitimacy has to be somewhere else. If it's not through voting, then it has to be through violence. If you don't want to kill people, then you have to have some peaceful way to do it.
Well, it's the outlet for political discontent. You have Chairman Mao, political power comes from the barrel of a gun.
Yeah, but he's not wrong.
One of the things is our political leaders, our civilian political leaders, control the military.
Exactly. And they control the legitimate force in the society. All other force is illegitimate. So he's right. It's just a catchy way of saying it.
Well, we're seeing the use of that military force in Washington, D.C. right now, or the misuse of that force. And the threat of expanding that force, well, it was in Los Angeles, where it was not met with great welcome by the natives of Los Angeles, but now they're threatening to go into Chicago
and New York. Let's
see, and New York. And
but the point is, if the Trump people, if the MAGA people are the Peter Thiel people, the Koch brothers people, if they succeed in managing to bollocks the election system up between redistricting, between all the various forms, all legitimate, that they take to make sure that elections don't fairly reflect the whim of the people, then the role of elections falls by the wayside and you're left with violence as the only alternative. So then they'll say, well, this is violent. That's not right. But you've eliminated the alternative to violence. You've done that.
Sure. In some way, well, that's a Machiavellian way of looking at things. You know, you create a crisis in order to try to quash the crisis, and then don't do reforms that the crisis was intended to bring forward. You know, in other words, people wanted to go in a different direction, and
yeah, but the point is the people in power don't want to go in that direction and they have a way to stop it. So they stopped it. Right. But then they complain that everybody else is illegitimate. Well, their complaint doesn't matter if they continue to rule because they're the ones who write the reports. They write the history and they write the newspapers.
Well, that's where I was going next. Yeah, the propaganda machine.
Yeah.
That's where it comes in. And we're seeing that over and over again. We're going to prevent. I was watching Stacey Abrams this weekend, and she put everything in a much more succinct way. But, you know, get rid of sources of news like NPR or PBS, or go to the universities and don't teach. You know, you have to teach other things. Go to places where history is recorded, like the Smithsonian, and tell them that slavery wasn't all that bad, right?
That's right.
That sort of stuff.
And really, there's a truth to that. Slavery wasn't all that bad if you happen to be the owner of the slave.
Yes. Yeah.
Because in any given situation, there's always two truths. Because if you have an antagonistic, contradictory relationship in society, you have two different judgments. The people who are beneficiaries of that antagonism and the people who are oppressed by that antagonism. Each one is right for itself. Right?
Yeah. To whom it applies.
To whom it applies. Now, it happens that in a democracy, you think the overwhelming majority of the people, what is beneficial to them, that should apply. That should rule. I agree with you. And you know what? So do the oppressors. That's why they're against democracy. That's right. Why the Peter Thiels of the world say it oppresses freedom. And it does. They're right. It oppresses their freedom to oppress.
Yes. That's it. And that's why we continue to have these schemes come up to make voting harder on people. You know, Donald Trump is going back to attacking mail-in voting, even though Republicans in many places benefit from mail-in voting. Utah is a mail-in voting state, and it's been run by the Republicans for years.
He attacks voting machines because voting machines count. Well, whereas people who count manually make errors, or they get paid off.
Yes.
You can't pay off a voting machine. You can corrupt it by reprogramming it, but otherwise, if you keep it safe, if you don't let people tamper with it, it'll actually count accurately.
By the way, you saw where Smartmatic got, what, $67 million from Newsmax because of what Newsmax said about their voting machines.
Yeah, exactly.
I keep waiting for the Smartmatic lawsuit against Fox to.
Well, that's coming up, isn't it?
It should be. But we'll get back to, you know, the voting.
And by the
machine.
Way, yeah, to get back to voting, by the way, the people in power, you made this point to me that the CEOs in the United States, the difference in wages between CEOs and the workers at their company in the 100 companies that are the lowest wage paying companies in the country.
Name a couple of them.
Walmart's, Starbucks, Amazon, Home Depot.
Never heard of them, right?
Never heard of them, right? You know, you can't run into those companies. In okay. those companies, the 100 of them, the difference in wages between the CEO and the man or woman working on the factory floor or the distribution floor or the warehouse is 632-1.
Right.
That's more than twice as much as the horrendous gap in wages between the CEO and the average worker in the rest of the economy. And the trend between 1965 and this year, in 1965, the difference between the CEO and the average worker was 21-1. By 2023, in the economy as a whole, the difference between the CEO's wages or income and the average worker's income went from 21-1 to 290-1. In terms of productivity, between 1978 and 2025, the wages of the income of CEOs rose 1,085%. In the same period, the income of workers rose 24%. In other words, in relative terms, the working class became immeasurably poorer.
And there's some factors to that. The demise or decline of unions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, look at what.
But if you want that kind of thing to continue, you can't have free elections.
Right. But look at how much Starbucks fights unions. I mean, they'll close a store rather than have it unionized.
Exactly. The whole industry has moved from New York to Pennsylvania to destroy the garment workers union. And when the workers in Pennsylvania, Scranton particularly, organized themselves into the garment workers union, they left the union. The bosses left Pennsylvania and went down to South Carolina and Georgia and Alabama. And when there was a threatened unionization by the ILGW in those states, they went to Haiti and Nicaragua and Guatemala. And from there, they went to China because it was even cheaper. So, and then you blame the Chinese workers, or you blame the Mexican workers, or you blame the Haitian workers. They had no vote in the matter. You blame the Pennsylvania workers? Did the New York workers blame the Pennsylvania workers? Same thing happened. It was the people who owned the factories that moved to maintain this kind of disparity in wealth.
Yeah, and I've been talking about that for a long time, as that being the biggest threat. But I'm not. I mean, I'm a Johnny come lately. Decades ago, there was a guy named Brandeis. You remember him? The Supreme Court guy who they named a school after him. He famously said, "Either you can have wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, or you can have democracy, but you can't have both."
Exactly right.
And he's proving to be true
for all
of these things. There's nothing wrong with wealth. The question is how it's accumulated and whether there's the opportunity for everybody to acquire it.
But there isn't an opportunity for everybody to acquire.
Well,
I mean, look, Trump made... Trump has been fighting with Powell. He wants the interest rates reduced, right?
Correct.
When interest rates get reduced, people who want to lend other people money charge more. You know, they want a bigger piece of the action, right?
Yeah. Well, if you own bonds.
If you own, that's right, it's represented in the price of bonds.
Right. The interest rate and the price of the bond are inversely related.
That's right. If the interest rate gets reduced, the bond price goes up because that determines how much you actually make, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So guess what? Trump demands that Powell reduce the interest rates. It looks like Powell is, or at least the Federal Reserve, whether or not Powell will agree with it, it looks like the bank, the Federal Reserve Board of Governors will go along with it. And then Powell, this last couple of days, made a speech indicating that he might go along with it too in the near future. Trump goes out and buys $100 million worth of bonds. Trump personally goes out and buys $100 million worth of bonds. If the interest rates fall, the price of his bonds will increase. Right?
Yeah. So
$100 million.
I mean, it's a blatant conflict of interest, but the Trump methodology is that to be blatant about it.
Yeah.
It used to be people kind of hid that stuff, like the people in Congress who, you know, didn't want people to know about the stocks that they were owning and then voting on.
Your Fred Bresnahan, your congressman, your man. Right.
Yeah, made 200, according to the commercial, made 200,000 in one day. Of course, he's a piker compared to Senator Rick Scott, who, how much was it that?
$26 million profit stock trading in stock that his senatorial committees oversaw.
Yeah.
Last year alone. 1 year, $26 million in profit. And Scott barely escaped getting sent to jail when he was the CEO of a healthcare company for cheating the federal government on false billing for Medicaid.
They were the largest Medicaid fraud
ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, and both parties have done it. Nancy Pelosi has done a good, or her husband anyway, investing made a lot of money on in stocks while she was voting on things. And she's been one of the main roadblocks to Congress not stopping that practice. But
you know, the fact that her husband did it is, so what? Husband did it. The point is, a lot of these jerks who are corrupt figure that if the money gets sent to their son or their daughter, they won't get tagged with the crime. Right? Yeah. After all, they didn't get the money. Who are you kidding?
That's it. That's it. You know, Donald Trump and his sons and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a way of estate planning for them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
He should get a commission.
That's it. And all different ways of cheating. You know, Trump had that, Michael Cohen had revealed how Trump used to cheat on taxes and cheat on loans by changing the value of his properties to fit the need. And finally, he got called out on it by Letitia James. Was found guilty of fraud and was hit with a huge penalty.
$400 million.
Dollars, over 500 after the interest. And this week, the appeals court bought the Trump defense of saying, well, there was no harm, no foul, because we paid back everything. The banks didn't lose money on this.
No, that's not exactly what they said. What the court said was the fraud stands. He did commit fraud, but the penalty is too great.
Yeah, but they said that he shouldn't have to pay anything, rather than say he should have to.
I thought they sent the determination of the penalty back down to Engeron, the judge.
I thought so too, but later on I saw something which said no, because everything was paid back. There were no. He was dealing with sophisticated lenders who had every opportunity to do things. Now, I also heard a counter argument to that, which was, yeah, but he got a more favorable interest rate. He would have had to pay a higher, back to interest rates, if his properties were worth less. And by inflating the value of his properties in order to get the loan, he benefited by tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in interest payments. So we'll have to see. That's going to go up to the ultimate court in New York State. We'll see what happens.
But the point is, if he doesn't have to pay anything, then where was the fraud?
Yeah. Well,
if there's no penalty, how can there be a fraud?
What did the fraud mean? It's sort of like I robbed the bank. I gave the teller my note. They gave me the $10,000 in the cash drawer. I walked out, and then I thought, well, a couple months later, I'll go back in and hand them the money back. See, no harm, no foul.
Yeah.
That's not it. One of the reasons you have these fraud laws is you want to have a fair process that applies to everybody.
But that goes contrary to what we're talking about. The powerful should not be held accountable to the laws that the people who are not powerful are held accountable.
Right. And it's this attitude that they're better than us. What was it? Hemsley, only the little people pay taxes.
Yeah.
That thing, or you hear some of these people, taxes are theft.
Are theft, right.
They want all the benefits the taxes accrue in the country. They want the army to be able to protect them, or the police to protect them. But they
want the government to train a workforce for them.
Yes. Yeah. But they don't want to contribute to that. They don't think that they have to. Only other people should do that.
Right.
We should get all these tax evasion methods.
That's right. That's right. Because the country is run for their benefit, not for your benefit, for their benefit.
We know how they do it. They hire lobbyists.
Yeah.
They fund think tanks to come up with these ideas and schemes. Remember the Frank Luntz idea that it's not an estate tax; it's a death tax.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they sell these things because they can afford to do that. You and I and the people listening to this can't afford to have our own lobbyists.
That's right.
To protect our taxes.
And you can see this, it goes, because it gets systematized. It doesn't stay at the level of money. It stays at it infiltrates all kinds of levels, philosophical levels, political levels. For example, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment of the United States Constitution passed at the conclusion of the Civil War and really were the peace treaty of the Civil War, were written to bring the emancipated slaves into America and to make sure that they were full citizens of the United States, at least the men, were full citizens of the United States. That was the point. Everybody knows that. There's no question about that. But the MAGA people argue that by itself, that disadvantages white people. And so therefore, the right way to understand the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment is they should be protecting white people and not giving benefits to black people, and that any attempt to give benefits to black people discriminates against white people because their privileges are being removed. Their entitlement is being removed. That's how they misuse history. And to make sure that you don't know that history is being misused, they then change the educational system. And since the educational system also exists in museums, they then change the museums. So it affects everything.
This is what Stacey Abrams was saying on the show that I saw. She went through all of this stuff. The victors write the history.
Yeah.
He who controls the present controls the past.
Yeah. Right. That's true. Right.
I'm full of platitudes this morning, right?
But the platitudes often contain truth.
Yes, they're awful. There's the other school now in some of the cases that are going to be going up to the Supreme Court, the citizen, who's a citizen, a natural born citizen of the United States, and they're going to argue that amendment, 14th Amendment, only applied to the people who were slaves at the time.
At that moment,
it has no meaning.
Today,
people today, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. The,
and
the,
to make that stick, you can't know anything about the actual development of jurisprudence in the United States.
Yeah,
you wipe that all out.
The twisting of history.
Yeah,
and even alternate forms. Remember what happened to the lady who did the 1619 project?
That's right.
She was a noted scholar. Now you might not agree with what she had, but it was scholarship. it presented a different idea of things. And when North Carolina University there offered her a professorship, one of their alumni got really upset and pressured them, and they withdrew it.
Yeah,
they withdrew it. They wanted to have the alumni money more than they wanted to have a scholar there.
That's right.
And then
that spreads, because then they attacked the whole concept of tenure, which they've done.
Right.
So that's how ideology develops out of economic relationships, out of the structure of society, and then takes on a life of its own. But ultimately, if you trace it back far enough, it comes back to who's fighting for the control of the wealth, and what's the form of that fighting? And then ideas develop out of that, and then you fight about those ideas. But that's why, on the one hand, it's wrong to say that ideas have no significance, and on the other hand, it's wrong to say that economic relationships have no significance. One ultimately rests on the other.
Well, because ideas relate to that. Remember, Falk rule number two is ideas matter.
Yeah, ideas matter.
All politics are battles of ideas.
They are battles of ideas, but they are based on real relationships.
Yeah, but the Republicans don't want to have those battles anymore. They want to rig it.
That's right. So they want to rig it.
They always want heads I win, tails you lose.
And that's what fascism is all about. That is the intellectual background of fascism. That is the intellectual product of fascism, to convince everybody by miseducating them or not educating them that the only interests that exist in society are the interests of the wealthy, which in our society means the owners of corporations, the owners of hedge funds, the owners of banks. And we are all part of that. So that if the interests of the owners are damaged, the interest of the worker is damaged, even though the owner is making 632 times what the worker is making in their common interest.
Yeah. I wrote a note to a friend of mine who's a professor at the University of Scranton, and I said, you have to be teaching more of George Orwell and Hannah Arendt. And he wrote back, and he said, well, people are studying that, but only as a roadmap as to how to do things instead of how to oppose things.
Right.
And, that was pretty stunning. So that's why you have to teach it the other way.
Which shows you that there are two truths in everything.
Yeah. And, George Orwell, in 1984, you would see where the current government, would change positions, 180 degrees, and then rewrite the history about it.
Well, that brings you back to your friend Bresnahan, who wrote the law that said congressmen shouldn't be allowed to invest privately, invested privately. And when he was said, what about this contradiction? He said, what am I going to do with my money if I don't invest it?
Yeah. And then you have the thing where, the government just took 10% stake in Intel. But for years, the GOP criticized the government's stake to save GM and Ford. Or they talked about picking winners or losers in Salinger. You couldn't do that. Now, of course, they're picking winners and losers based on who can pay off Trump the most.
Exactly. All right, we're done for this week with this commentary.
I hope our democracy isn't done.
I hope so, too. But the real question is, and we haven't come to that because we have no time right now, is where's the opposition? And can the Democrats be an effective opposition? That's an interesting question.
And this week they were talking about how they're losing registration and continue to lose it. And you never get back in the game unless you get people involved in your party. So,
okay, we'll go on with this next week. Unfortunately, this is not going away.
No. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.